Oxygen number 12518 to reel 2.
Mrs. Langdon, reel 3. So you were doing this work in the DP camps in Germany from 45 to 47,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
For nearly two years.
Yeah, I went in the after the war, and the war stopped in May, so I went in July, I think I went. So it was nearly 2 years.
But you weren't just in Team 238
no,
at Lübeck.
I was in I went to Team 100 in Neustadt, where there was more. There was different camps we were going, because we were moved around. Somebody left home, and then they need another nurse there. And the whole idea with our work was to find nurses or doctors in the camps amongst the DPs and drivers and everything. So we interviewed people and nurses, and of course they said we are SIN, they said, the Polish people or the Baltic people, but we had lost our paper during the war. So I said, right, let us try to do, can you take a temperature, can you take a pulse?
You were testing them.
I was testing them, and they couldn't, so I said, out, next one. So it happened. So there was also another thing where we couldn't get enough for those people. You know, they were starving. They were lying in camps, in the camp, and they're living in a big army camp with grey blankets between them, and there was father and mother and two children living in the same big bed, you know, that chainsaw and so on, and they were all pregnant. There was syphilis, there was all sorts of illnesses. There were lots of things to do. What was it I tell you? Yes, there was one day I meant to go to Denmark, and I said, can I take a lorry up to Denmark? And then I wrote to the scouts in Denmark and said, could you now try to get me a whole lorry full of small shoes, because I haven't got shoes for the children, and a whole lorry full of bulbs, because there were some intelligent people, all the Estonian people, there were some professors, there were clever people that lived in as displaced persons, and they wanted to sit and read, and they couldn't see because they only had a 40-watt bulb. So the scout moving in Denmark began to work. And then and there was another thing also, I must mention that, because this has to do with illness. Those days we had sanitary towels. We didn't have any sanitary towels. So therefore I wrote to scouts, can you collect it? And when I came up to Denmark, would you believe it, there was a lorry full of sanitary towels, a lorry full of children's shoes, and a lorry full of bulbs.
Where had they come from?
The scouts in Denmark has collected it to the displaced person in Germany.
Collected it from Denmark?
From people in Denmark. So I wrote to Denmark and asked them to do it, and I will come up such and such and leave. And I came, I had a truck, and we were not allowed to drive ourselves, so I had a driver, and he took me up there, and we got those three lorries full. And to get them through the border, that was a terrible thing, because when I came to the Danish border with those three lorries that were driving down to Germany, to the British zone, no, you can't take that down there. I said, look, forget about that, I'm going to help the displaced person. So I got them through. And when I came down to the camp, I remember we had some American people, and they said, oh, here's the UNRWA Schwester, she's going to make black market out of that. So I said, don't you dare say that to me. So I kept all my things in my office, and I was stacked out, there was no room for me to tell me I was doing black market with that. I was going to distribute it. So I had a wall full of sanitary towels, a wall full of bulbs, and a wall full of shoes.
So you were a sister?
Yeah, an UNRWA sister. That was the organizer. There was a doctor and a sister, and then I got have to find in the camps nurses that could help me. So we opened sick bays, we opened milk kitchen, because we couldn't get it. You can imagine milk bottles, they had little paraffin lamps in their little rooms where they warmed the milk for the babies. So I got a naffy of cigarettes and gin and whiskey every week you could buy for naffy. So I took my trunk, and I said to the driver, drive up to that German farmer, And of course, you can do all that. You're in uniform, or you could say you want that. So I came up on the scene and look, here's 20 cigarettes and here's a bottle of whiskey. Can I have that table, those saucepans, and those spoons? So that's how I built up my milk kitchen in the camp. And that was about 2,000 or 3,000 people in the camps. They were in small camps. They were not small camps. That was a tough work, but it was lovely.
So you've mentioned these teams, like 238 and 100.
Yeah.
How big were these teams?
The team was, that was about eight people in a team. And there was a director and a second director, I think. And there was a doctor and a nurse, two secretary and a welfare officer, and two drivers. That was a team, and there was all different nationality. I remember we had two British drivers, and we had an American doctor. No, a Danish doctor. And the two we stayed together, Dr. Carlson and I. That was interesting. That was a good team.
And you were so short of supplies that you had to get this naffy.
Oh yes,
cigarettes and whiskey. I used
my naffy and asked the others when they didn't use it, could I have it? And then we built up our milk kitchens because we could. It was very difficult. We got the parcels from America or England to the patients in hospital, but you couldn't just get a saucepan. You couldn't. My office was a desk on a table. A desk and a chair, and then there was a telephone on a stove, and I got one piece of wood a day to keep myself warm, so I could go out and ask the displaced person, have you got some more wood? But I mean, you got to build it up yourself. That's why I felt when I started house visiting in England, in London here, 1957, I thought to myself, what are they grumbling about? You phone up and you say, can I have so and so? I thought they said, if they just knew and you have to have 10 cigarettes to give. So it was really easy work for me. And I worked in Elephant Castle in the tough area with all the Greek Pakistans. And I loved it, every minute of it. It was lovely.
So after what you'd seen in Germany in 45, 47?
That was nothing in 57 when I came here. And all the hospitals said, this is a tough area. Tough? I said, this is all right. It was interesting. It really was interesting.
Did you went to Lübeck and you went to Neustadt. Were you in any other places and any other teams?
Yeah, there was a short time in another one in Lübeck, but that was only because there was short staff of nurses and then I helped out. But Neustadt was the longest place. And there was many camps. And can I tell you one thing? And I met two Latvians last year, and they said to me, there was in the students in Guildford University, and they said to me, as I said, will you come and see me and I will tell you about what, and they saw my photograph, and they sat on there was a very, very sentimental meeting. We all sat and cried here, and they said, Pip, will you come over to Latvian and see us, and then we will get a reporter and you tell how awful we had it in the camps. I said, I will. So last year, I went to the Russian embassy and I heard I could come over, but I got to have a Russian visa and they wouldn't let me. No, that's not true. I sent letters over to the girls and they were taken by the Russians, so they didn't get them. So I phoned her. She said, I had never had any letters and you promised you would come over. But now, this year, there is no, I don't have to have a Russian visa, so I'm going this summer or to see them. Now, that is young girls about, they have been here, they're about 25 or 27, and one of the uncles, you see, this is their father that's been there in the camp, and one of them had an uncle in one of the camps I was working in, but he must be dead, of course, but isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So I'm going over to Riga this summer. I'm determined before I get too old. It's interesting.
So, whilst you were doing this work for the DPs, were you also helping to arrange to get them moved to other countries?
No. I was helping to get them to, so they could be UNRWA, UNRWA 2. We were UNRWA 1. So we got all the nurses. I had nurses in the camps. I had nurses in the camp, some helped me in the sick bay, and I trained them up. And then when I left, they began to be in UNRWA uniforms, and then they took over. And they took over, the displaced persons took over our work. And then later on, they were all sent away to America, and I've still been in contact with them now, but now I'm not anymore in contact with them.
What was the difference between UNRWA 1 and UNRWA 2?
UNRWA 2 was displaced persons. We were training them. We found in the camp those that's been in Belsen and those that came from Germany that helped the German during the war, they all came into the camps. And then we found, we said, look, all that's been nurses, for instance, in my work, come into the camp, into my office, and let me hear if you are trained person. And then when there were trained persons, we then made a course, and there were some nurses later in Lübeck that gave them a course in nursing in the camps. But I was finding them from the camp. Can you see what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. That was wrong. On doctors too, on welfare. So they took over completely, and then I don't think that it lasted more than a year or two, and then they were all sent away.
So all the work that you did in Germany was in the British zone?
That was for the British, yeah. We worked together with the military, because one day I found some that has been down in my milk kitchen and stolen my potatoes and my, what more, they made spirits out of it. Well, what do you make spirits out of? Potatoes and sugar, I think. And they were drunk. And I came in and I said, don't you dare, there was some Polish people. So I phoned the military. And they came into prison, and I can still see me standing in one camp. It's a Flenderwerke, a camp called Flenderwerke. And I stood there in the door in the sick bay, and they screamed, I went, du bist gestorben, did you kill me? I said, I don't care, go away, you're taking my sugar and my bread for my babies. So the military government said, it's no good, people, you will go into the camp alone. So I had a soldier with me for 6 months to go in with me. I said, give me a pistol, I have shot them out, but I'm not allowed to do it. That was terrible. There's no wonder. When I came home on leave, I went to my mother into the shops in Copenhagen, and I went into the nice shops, and I said, I like that and that and that. And my mother said, people, you don't talk to people like that. I was so used to talk to Germans down that.
To giving orders.
Yeah. So I sort of said, that's awful. I said, I'm sorry, undskyld, in Danish. So this was my little life.
But did you find this work in Germany very tiring and wearing?
No, it was rewarding. It was rewarding. It was tiring, because we lived in, we were freezing in the winter time. I remember I dressed myself up and I went to bed in my room in the office mess, because it was so cold. The knitted hat and socks and everything. It was tough, but it was lovely. I really enjoyed that work, but it was sad, many things.
How did the German population regard the British military government in the British zone at that time?
They had nothing to say. They didn't say anything. You see, the Germans were divided into Russia, France, and
American.
They're not Russian, yes, a Russian part of it, wasn't it, yeah. British zone was Hamburg and Nuremberg and Lübeck, that part, south of Denmark. And then the French was on the other side and the Americans on the other side.
But the attitude of the German civilians in the British zone, yeah. Were they cooperative?
We didn't have much to do with them. We were really rather naughty to them. Nasty to them, because I was particularly, because I knew how they had been to us during the war.
Nasty in what way?
Yeah,
in your manner?
Answered them back and said, you don't let us go. So there's no wonder that I was tough when I came to the Elephant Garden for Goddess Somerset. There is one little story I would like to tell you from the camp in Neustadt. There was one day some people came into my office and come running over and said, we have found a little Polish lady in the camp lying with her dead baby wrapped in newspaper, and she had it for 2 days there and she won't give it away. So I said, leave it to me, I should go over and see the little baby and see mother. So I spoke to the doctors in the camp, the Danish doctor I worked with, and we got some medicines we could give the mother so we could calm her down. And then I went over and talked to her, and I said, look, let me have the little baby over to the sick bay, and then we will have it put in the coffin and give him a funeral. No, she said, the baby must be dressed up in little white dress on a little white hat with green leaves around the hat and little gloves on. So I said, but this will all be done. So I went over to my office and phoned the welfare officer. I said, now look, how quick can you make a little coat on a little hat out of layette we had, and to give the mothers when they were pregnant. And then she came over a couple of hours after and had sewn it, and I suddenly saw green leaves in November when there's snow outside in the camp. And certainly I thought, I have got a little busy lisa. I would take all the leaves off, or plant like a busy lisa, and I glued it on the little hat. And then I went over to the mother and said, now look, now we will dress up your little baby in all the little dress I've got it. And then she will give it to me, and I took it over to the camp, and we had a nice little funeral. But on one condition, she said, I wanted to have a photograph of that little baby. I said, but that can be done. But then again, I had to call a German in and give him 10 cigarettes and said, look, will you take a photograph? Because we didn't have a camera. I didn't have a camera at that time. So they took a photograph of the baby. So there, we could work if we paid for the Germans. You see?